Hi, I'm Sean. I've always had a passion for personal growth and a curiosity for life's profound questions. I created this show as a platform dedicated to inspiring change through thoughtful and insightful conversation. There's a lot happening in our world today. Some of it clear, some of it confusing. My goal with these conversations is to leave you feeling better and more informed about the state of our world in these challenging times. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. When I decided to relaunch this podcast after a two-year hiatus, I knew I wanted to revisit some of the conversations that had inspired me along the way. My mission with the show has always been to challenge perceptions, but also to provide some inspiration in a world that sometimes feels void of it. Mixed in with all new episodes, I'll be revisiting some of my personal favorite conversations I've had over the years, but with a twist. Within these reimagined episodes, you'll find previously unshared segments from these discussions with guests that didn't make it into the original episode. I've also taken the time to enhance the audio quality for these updated episodes. I'm confident that you'll find them inspirational and insightful. My guest for this episode was at the top of my list of people I wanted to interview when I embarked on this crazy endeavor of creating a podcast. And she's proof that if you ask, the answer might just be a resounding yes. She embodies everything about my mission with this show, and I guarantee you she'll have some significant tools to improve your life. She's a best-selling author, motivational speaker, and success coach who's made appearances on Oprah and countless other shows. If you're someone who's looking to make any real, lasting changes in your life, this might be one of the most impactful conversations you'll listen to. I invite you to think outside the lines with Lisa Nichols. All right, Lisa, I cannot tell you how excited I am to have you on the show today. I have a short list of people in my life who have inspired me to achieve the things that I want, and I have to tell you that you are most certainly on that list.
Thank you.
Yeah, I first discovered you, I think, like much of the rest of the world did in The Secret, yes. Which is obviously a movie about the law of attraction. But there's a piece of content that has affected me probably the most, and it's a YouTube video that I came across. It was your appearance at the Awesomeness Fest, where you gave a talk called The Questions to Stir Your Soul. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that, like, I watch a lot of TED Talks. This wasn't specifically a TED Talk, obviously, but I consider that video to be more inspiring than most TED Talks that I've watched, and I love TED Talks. One of the things that you said in that particular video was that I don't need you to know my name. I just need you to be inspired by something I said or did. And that was so powerful and inspiring to hear. I think, especially in a world today where it seems like everyone's kind of looking for their 15 minutes of fame.
Yep.
Obviously, I'm honored to have you on the show today. And I just want to say thank you so much for making such a huge impact on my life. And I know countless others.
Sean, it's my pleasure to be with you. And I'm excited to be a part of your journey, because as you go out and inspire millions that I may not ever reach, you know, I get to watch you let your wings soar. So I spread your wings and soar. So I'm honored as well, my friend.
Thank you so much. So I'd love if you could start off with some of the Lisa Nichols highlights, if you will, and tell us what you believe to be the message that you were brought here to share.
The message that I was brought here to share with the world is my latest book title. I don't see it for that, so I don't want it to come across that way, but really that abundance and prosperity and joy is our birthright, and that our past does not equal our future. If it wasn't fun, if it wasn't exhilarating, if it wasn't encouraged, our past is a setup for our next best season. That everyone, underline, everyone has a right to experience joy and abundance and prosperity and love, and that we don't have to ask the world for permission. We get to give the world notice that you are your own rescue all day, every day, all the time, and that we all have it in us. We all have it in us to be exactly who we believe ourselves to be. We just have to do things we've never done before, say things we never said before, to see and be the man or the woman that we've only seen ourselves to be in our dreams.
Yes, 1,000%. That's so eloquent. I hear your voice and I'm immediately inspired. Where do you cultivate this passion and this authenticity that clearly just resonates from you?
Oh, wow. I think a lot of it, you know, without sounding, you know, narcissistic or self-indulgent, but it comes from my own story. It comes from being my own rescue. It comes from reinventing myself 1,000 times. It comes from not counting the number of times that I've been knocked down, but being committed to track the number of times that I was willing to get back up. It comes from me going, if I could do it, then Sean can do it, and Tom can do it, and Deirdre can do it, and Lee can do it. And knowing that people refer to me as an extraordinary woman, but I know that I'm an ordinary woman who simply chose every day to do one more extraordinary action. And so I'm inspired by looking at my journey and inspired by looking at the journey of people who've come before me. I'm inspired about looking at people who I watch right now. So I'm inspired by witnessing. I'm a big witnesser. I'm a big find an example of what's possible. And once you see it one time, man, it didn't stop right there. I don't believe the universe, the divine God, whatever you choose to call it, would bless one person with the opportunity to tap into their human spirit and to tap into their tenacity and to tap into their resilience. I believe that we all have that tenacity. We all have that human spirit. We all have that resiliency. We have that human spirit that's unbreakable, unshakable, unstoppable, and it's unavailable to the circumstances that are going on around us. I just believe it to be so. So when I witness it in myself or in someone else, then I go, woo, how do we all tap into this?
Yes. Tell me about a challenge that you've overcome in your life, like maybe one of the greatest challenges you've overcome in your life and what you learned from that coming out of it.
Only one. I guess I would say one of the ones that linger with me the most, my limiting beliefs about who I was or what I had a right to, my chatter, no matter how fast I ran, no matter how sexy the title on my business card, no matter the balance in my bank account, my negative chatter was just always there until I really learned how to confront it and not try to outrun it or outproduce it or outtalk it or outshine it, but just really look at it and minimize it into the nothingness that it was. And so what I began to do to overcome it, because it was big. I mean, when I was in high school, I ran track. I was captain of the track team. I was head of the cheerleading squad. I was editor of the yearbook. I was in student council. And at 19, I was suicidal, but no one knew. I didn't even know how to tell anyone because it didn't make sense. But I had a great family. I had a stable home. I had everything. I just was sad. I recalled a memory of being touched inappropriately by my babysitter's son. And I went into this emotional spiral and I didn't know how to get out. And I don't want to put the attention on the what happened to me as much as I want to spotlight, Sean, the emotional place I was in. And I believe that we can be super achievers. We can be producers. We could be come from great families and we can get in this emotional funk and not know how to get out. And then we try to rationalize the emotional funk by going, why am I here? I should be grateful. I have more. And so I didn't know. I wasn't using the right tools to get out of the emotional funk. And it just took on different looks and different views over the next several years, over the next like 10 years or so. And yet I didn't know how to tell anyone because I always had a smile on my face. I was always the go-to girl. I was always producing. My 70% was someone else's 120%, you know? And so, you know, I was kind of, have you ever been there? I was just kind of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there's so many people listening right now that have been there. And I think that it's, I'm the type of person, like, I think we all have a dark place that we can turn inward once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we don't admit we have one, we are setting ourselves up for a plummet,
absolutely,
a fall, a crash.
Absolutely. So how did you pull yourself out of that?
Is it an
ongoing process?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked. Well, you know what? It's an ongoing process, but like training, physically training, it's different when you're developing the muscle than when you're maintaining the muscle.
Yes, I agree.
So while it absolutely is an ongoing process, I don't have to do today. I don't have to lift as heavy today as I had to lift 10 years ago. And so what I did, and for those of you, you know, if you're listening to my voice, this is that exercise. This is that juicy, delicious me self-work that I say do always. And it's why I'm so committed now, You know, I've been teaching business development consistently for the last 10 years. We've created over 150 authors, help people generate over $3 million in their businesses. And now I shifted this year to personal development. And the reason why is because I can always teach you business development, love, love, love it. But if your personal development isn't intact, you will get stuck and stagnated. So I recommend that you get in the mirror and that you do some mirror work. And there's many, many exercises to do, but I always love to start here. And I started doing this work 18 years ago, and I still do it.
Wow.
And you get in the mirror. And I first heard about something like this from my good friend, Jack Canfield. And I just tweaked it for my needs.
Sure.
And to complete three sentences. And the first sentence, say your name, and you would say Sean, and then complete the sentence, I'm proud that you. And give yourself seven different endings. So say the same sentence seven times with seven different endings. And so I got in the mirror and I needed to affirm Lisa. Lisa, I'm proud that you're standing here in this mirror, acknowledging yourself. Lisa, I'm proud that you are raising your son in a healthy manner without toxic conversations and with healthy food and healthy, you know, possibility. Lisa, I'm proud. So I just did seven different I'm proud that you. And then the second sentence, Sean, that's the one that's going to kind of knock you down. It's the one that's going to make you want to quit. So please don't quit. It's the one that's a little too majorly uncomfortable. And that's Sean, I forgive you for. Lisa,
yes.
I forgive you for. And that's the one where I say, go back 20 years, go back 15 years, go back to that thing that's still right there in the crevice of the back of your mind that you're still really keeping score on with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and in doing that, I forgive you for, you're now cutting the shackles to blame, shame, guilt, regret, and anger. And then the final sentence is, Sean, I commit to you that. And so before you go out into the world and you make these commitments to other people, which we do so fast, we make commitments to others before we make commitments to ourselves, you're making a commitment to yourself. So mine would look like this. Lisa, I commit to you that today you will speak only positive to yourself. And if a negative thought should creep in, that you will immediately evict it. Lisa, I commit to you that today you'll only say yes when you want to say yes, and you'll say no when you choose to say no. And so in those three sentences, you one, celebrate yourself because we're under-celebrated. You two, cut the shackles of blame, shame, guilt, regret, anger from the recent and the far past. And three, you make a bold declaration to yourself before you and show up for you before you show up for anyone else. I did that every single morning after I brushed my teeth for 6 months.
Wow. Yes.
Every morning. I didn't miss a morning. Now I do it probably once a week, but I've been doing it once a week for the last 18 years, 17 years.
I love it. I've talked about mirror work with a couple other people on the show, and I think there's some. It sounds so simple, right? Like you and I are talking about it right now, and I could walk into my bathroom right now and say these things, I think. But when you get there, and I think that's your point, is once you're in front of the mirror, like looking into your own eyes and saying something like, I love you, I forgive you.
Yeah.
It is very difficult.
You'll just become very present, Sean,
yeah,
with how much you've been with other people, but you haven't been with you. That you've been external. You haven't been internal. And when you look at yourself, I always say, look at yourself like you're looking at your very best friend in a time of need, because then you'll release all the judgment that you'll have for yourself, your look, your skin, your hair, all that stuff that you pick out, you pick yourself apart about, that now you'll be loving. And sometimes being intimate with you, with your emotions, is the most uncomfortable thing. And so you're right. It sounds easy to do, but you know, I want to charge those of you who are listening to my voice to send a message to Sean on what did it feel like after you did it the first time, and then go into what did it feel like after you did it four or five times. I promise you, give yourself 21 days at this, and you'll begin to expand your self-awareness. You'll begin to stand on cement, not what seems sometimes to be sinking sand. You'll be more solid and more stern in what you're proud of, what you celebrate. And you'll also be more committed to what you need to say yes to and what you need to release. Just this act by yourself will make the biggest difference.
I want to talk briefly about The Secret. Obviously, it's a book and a film that's had a profound impact on a lot of lives. And it's a project that I believe has really shaped the trajectory of this new level of awareness that we're currently in the midst of. How did you become involved in that? And how did it shape and kind of change your career?
What's funny is, and you're right, The Secret is one of the individual pieces that have touched the most people in the world that's ever come out and had a global impact. I think at one point I heard it was in the Guinness Book of World Records as being the one single element of something that served the most diverse group of people. Wow. And so it's been very powerful. And I agree with you. It had an awareness and generated an awareness that crossed cultural lines, that crossed generational lines, that crossed geographical lines, it crossed economic lines, it crossed every spiritual line, it crossed every line in such a beautiful way. And I was invited to, you're going to laugh now, Sean, don't think less of me or you, I'm not sure.
But never.
When I was asked to do The Secret, I think I was the youngest person in The Secret by like 10 years, 15 yeah. years. I hadn't really been in self-development, the law of attraction component. You know, I was in self-development, make it happen, no yeah. matter what, you know, just kind of like, you know, I'm Joe on the street. I'm rebel, you know, with cause.
Totally.
I'm going rogue. You know, I'm kind of outside. I wasn't in the house with all the transformational leaders. I was outside on the front lawn yelling to the neighbors, but I was in the same community. I just wasn't in the same zip code, right?
Totally. Yeah.
And so when I was asked to do The Secret, I didn't know what they meant when they said, we want to teach about the law of attraction and quantum physics and da 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 da. I was like, what does that mean? You know, in my neighborhood, it was called the law of you better get up one more time, no matter what, make it happen. And so really this divide was there, and I didn't understand what they wanted me to contribute. So I actually tried to get out of being in The Secret.
Wow.
And I tried to, you know, tell them, no, have someone else, because I was afraid that they would figure out that I had no idea what the law of attraction was, what this whole universal look. All I knew was the law of no matter what. Now, little did I know later it was the same thing, or little did I know because I knew what you think about, you bring about. I knew that. I didn't know about
what it was called.
I didn't know what it was called. I just know my grandmother said, baby, you form your life by the thoughts you have and by the words you speak. You are forming your existence. I knew that since I was a little girl. I didn't know any formal, you know, training way that they called it. And so I tried to get out of The Secret, and I appreciate my friends who were in The Secret, such as Jack Canfield and Marcy Shimoff. And I appreciate Rhonda Byrne, who produced it, because they knew what I knew. They knew. They said, we don't care that you don't call it what we call it. We don't care. We know you know it and you live it. So just talk.
Because you're an example.
Huh?
Because you're an example of it. You're living it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. And so when I recorded it, I knew that they recorded about 55 people, Sean, and only 26 were going to end up in The Secret. So I completely expected to be on the editing room floor. I was really surprised. But I get that the reason why The Secret was so powerful was because it bridged the gap between people who believed in the law of attraction and they knew about it. And then it bridged the gap. People who just knew, wait a minute, I have the power to shape my future. And this book, this video just affirmed people. It said, yes, you're on the right track. And then to a bunch of others, it said, watch out, watch what you're thinking,
yes,
watch what you're speaking, because the world isn't doing anything to you. The man isn't doing anything to you.
Right?
The economy, the government, those people over there, they're not doing it to you. You're speaking life into your own experience.
Yes.
That put a sense of responsibility on people that they hadn't had before. But it also put an opportunity for those of us who were excited about it to go, oh man, you mean I'm really in the driver's seat? I'm about to drive this baby to the tilt. I'm about to drive to go to the moon and back. And so it just got people on fire. So, you know, when I saw the whole thing, you know, from beginning to end, a year later, it wasn't until a year later that I even saw the whole video.
Yeah.
And I was able to tie my contribution into other people's contribution. I was blown away at how I did know everything about the law of attraction. I just didn't call it that. And so what happened was my brand, my appearance in The Secret became the doorway for all the lay people who had never experienced the law of attraction before, but they were living the law of no matter what, the law of positive thinking.
Yes. And you know what? I actually had a follow-up question, but I feel like you've kind of already answered it. What is the misconception about The Secret or the law of attraction in general?
All you have to do is sit on the couch and think about it. Couch and meditate.
And that sports car appears in your driveway, right?
Oh my God. And checks appear in your mailbox. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You better get your butt up off that couch. All you're going to have is a big dent in your couch. Like the law of attraction plus action. Attraction, action. Attraction, action. That if you don't do anything, you're not going to get anything. That you cannot just think about it and it's going to appear. This is no genie, no potion lotion, no magic dust, no wand. There's none of that. There is hard work. Think about it, speak life into it, and then create a strategy plan and get your butt in action.
Amen. Amen.
Sorry, I'm a little passionate about that part.
No, that's why you're here. I want you to be passionate about it 100%. Now, you just released what I believe is a brilliant new book called Abundance Now.
Yay.
And I have been listening to the audio version on repeat. I'm not even joking you. Because
you get a lot of bonuses in the audio, right? The audio is full of extra.
Well, you get to hear your voice. And I think that's the most powerful part, because words on a page can resonate, I believe. But when you hear someone's passion behind the words that they're speaking, it changes the dynamic 100%.
Yes.
So obviously, I think there's a lot of gems in there. And I want to try and cover as many of the highlights as I can during our time together today. But I want to start by talking about one of my favorite topics that you cover, which is relationships. Now, talk to me about the three types of relationships as you define them. So we've got lifetime, life-giving, and purposeful.
Oh my God, I love you. This is my favorite. This is some of my favorite teaching right here. And the reason because this is somebody's breakthrough, like right now, instantly. You know it's coming, right?
Yep.
You know it's coming. So relationships, they actually are the thing that we spend the most energy on in our lifetime. Between relationships that are sibling and family, relationships that are love, and relationships between our friends, relationships is the experience, the category in our life. When we think about all the categories, we have relationship, spirituality, health and wellness, and finance. Those are those four big categories. Relationship consumes the most energy, and we talk about it the most because we're in and out of them and they matter and they touch our heart. So when I learned this, the three types of relationships, it was like, I mean, it's like the light bulbs went on and the angels were singing. They sounded a lot better than me, by the way. So there's three types of relationships. And if you're listening, you absolutely want to grab a pen. You absolutely want to write this down, and you might want to press replay later. So the first type of relationship is a life-giving relationship. Now, this relationship lasts anywhere from, yes, get this, one night, one day to 2 years. Yes, one day to 2 years. And the purpose of this relationship is to give you life, to let you know you're still in the game, to let you know that you still got it, to let you know to don't give up on love, to let you know that you're worthy of a phenomenal friendship. Now, it's going to feel like I'm leaning to a romance because this kind of, it's consumed in the romance area, but this is across all boards. This is friendship. This is family. So this life-giving relationship could be a friend that came and went in 6 months, but they sparked something in you. It could be a lover who came and went, a boyfriend, a girlfriend who came and went in 2 years or in a year and a half or in 6 months or in 2 weeks. And they just spark something in you that will never go back to sleep. That's life. And then the second type of relationship is lifetime. A lifetime relationship is just that. One person is going to bury the other. They may get on your last nerve. They may just make you go crazy and want to scream, but someone is going to bury the other person. It's just going to happen. That category is called lifetime. Very small category, but that category absolutely, absolutely exists. Now, this third and final category, that's the one where 80% of us live. That's also the one where we have the most turbulence, the most discord, the most discomfort, and the most people.
Yeah.
And this category is the category that we really spend so much of our our emotional time vested in. And that relationship is called a purposeful relationship. So we have our life giving, our lifetime, and this is our purposeful relationship. 80% of our relationships fall inside this category. Over 90% of our discord, emotional disruption, lives in this category, because when you're in a purposeful relationship, purposeful, meaning it's full of purpose. Now, what happens is the reason why there's so much discord, Sean, the reason why there's so much unhappiness, the reason why there's so many arguments and frustration is because once the purpose is fulfilled, now someone's going to get their breakthrough. If you get your breakthrough, you email Sean right when you get it. Once the purpose is fulfilled, the relationship will forever take a shift. Once the purpose is fulfilled, the relationship will forever take a shift. Meaning, if you came together to grow each other up, if you came together to launch a business, if you came together to experience what love feels like, if you came together to have children, if you came, whatever the purpose is that you came together for, once the purpose is fulfilled, the relationship will take a shift. Does it end? No, not always. It takes a shift. What causes the discord, Sean, is people trying to get the relationship back to the way it was.
Yeah.
While the purpose was being fulfilled. Now, can a relationship fulfill its purpose in year 5 and stay together for another 10, 15 years? Absolutely. It just looks and feels differently. A lot of people say it's flat. It's unfulfilling. It's, you know, it just has this different energy. Most time, the discord is so big once the purpose is fulfilled that the relationship many times has to be completed, meaning it ends, meaning you can't stay together. But because we don't know and we haven't been taught a healthy way to look at this, we have to make something wrong, make the other person wrong. We got to look for evidence, Sean. We collect evidence on why they're wrong and why we should leave, because we haven't been taught great emotional literacy around relationships. So a lot of my students now say, oh my God, so that means I can look for the purpose that we were together. I can thank him for it. I can thank her for fulfilling that purpose with me and then release them, leaving their dignity and my dignity intact. Notice I said release and we're complete. I never say we break up, because I'm not broken and you're not broken. We're complete. We're complete. We're not broken. Why do we break up? Who created that? What ding dong created the word breakup? Breakup. We broke up. No. I'm whole. I got both limbs. I got all my limbs. I got my brain. I got my heart. I got everything. I'm just complete. We're just complete with this experience. So what I invite people to do is to take a piece of paper and to make a list. I know this, hide the paper later if your list is kind of long. You know, it's all right. You know, my list was kind of long. And make a list of every person that you've ever dated, every friend you've ever had, where it ended. And you have a little bit of ick around, a little funk still around it. And create two columns, three columns, actually. One column is lifetime. The other column is purposeful. And the final column is what was the purpose? And write their names down on the left column and check the box on which one they were, lifetime or purposeful. And then write to the far right what the purpose was. He gave me a beautiful son. She gave me the opportunity to grow up. She showed me how to love a woman. And when you find the purpose, you'll realize right in that moment, there'll be a spark of compassion that opens up. And you'll actually complete even greater with that person, even if you don't ever see them again. When I tell you this exercise was life for me. I didn't create it. I heard about it from someone and I did it. And it was that thing that gave me breath again. And I've done it for men that I've dated. I've done it for women that I was friends with. I've done it for business partners that I did business with. Every time I feel like, oh, I gotta let this person go. I gotta let this experience go. I gotta find a healthy place for this experience. Then I go back and I do the purposeful or the lifetime or the life-giving. And what did they do to give me life? Or what did they do inside of purposeful? That right there is everything.
Amen. So I have to tell you, I'm so glad that you most eloquently stated everything I wanted you to, because I heard you talk about this on another, the Lewis Howes podcast recently. And you you defined it very similarly, and it impacted me in such a way because I have had someone in my life personally that I came out of a long-term relationship and thought, you know what, kind of over love, not really into that anymore. Let's focus on other things. And then the life-giving relationship came into my life.
Yes.
And I've got to tell you that like releasing that, I mean, I don't have to tell anybody listening or you, releasing that can be brutal.
Yes, you're right.
But there's something about having the awareness around what it is. I'd never heard it referred to in such a way. And
isn't that beautiful to have that tool available to you? Isn't that a blessing?
Oh my God. It was a blessing that I can't even describe to you. I mean, it's like, thank you. I'm so grateful that I get to thank you for it right now because you genuinely presented something to me that love is not something that's foreign to us, right? Like we all go through it, we all navigate. But once in a while, to your point, someone brings a tool to our awareness that it's just like the angels sing, and it's it's an amazing thing.
Right. So, and you don't even know, like, someone's listening to this and you don't need it right now.
Yep.
You're going to put it in your back pocket and you're going to look up in a year and 3 months and you're going to need it and it's going to be there and you're going to feel all the power of utilizing the tool. And that's when the gratitude will crack open even wider.
Or someone's listening right now and they're going through it and they have no idea how to cope.
Yes.
And this is that thing that's going to help them cope. And so that is why that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that's why I love what you're doing. Yeah. Thank you. Good stuff. So you say two things in regard to relationships that I try to remind myself of every day. One of them is I'm the example of how the rest of the world is supposed to treat me. And the second is that your perception of me after I tell my truth is none of my business.
I like you, Sean. I like you, Sean.
Can you elaborate on those a little bit?
Yeah. So the first one, that you're the first example of how the world's supposed to treat you. I first said that when I was on the Oprah Winfrey show in 2007 for The Secret. And she just looked at me. She was like, exactly. I think the same way. So I walked away.
That's an aha moment right there. That is an aha moment, as she would call it.
It was an aha moment. It really was an aha moment. And so in that statement is, you are the example of how the world gets to treat you. You're giving it every day. How you treat yourself is how everyone else is going to treat you. It's unrealistic. And I want someone, you need to hear it. Someone, you chimed in for this moment right here. It's unrealistic for you to expect other people to treat you better than you're treating yourself. Okay. That your job is to give the world the best example possible of how to speak to you, how to love you. Now, that's not going around telling people, now let me tell you how to talk to me and let me tell you how to love me. It's not giving instructions like that. It's living by example. It's giving yourself time to rest. It's meditating if you need to. It's nourishing your body the right way. It's saying, you know what? No, I don't want to be up past 11. I need my sleep. You're going to train everyone to not call you at midnight when you say, I need my sleep. You train the world how they get to treat you. My grandmother says, if you want your yes to be more valuable, then you need to learn how to exercise your no.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, right, exactly. And so when you love you, when you celebrate you, from the way you look, the way you dress, the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you talk about yourself, refer to yourself, the way you reflect on yourself, everyone's watching you and they're taking note of how they get to treat you. The people in my circle, I'm blown away. I'm blown away at the way they love me. But they're a reflection of the way Lisa has finally, after years of struggling with loving Lisa, finally learned how to fall madly in love with Lisa. And I don't say that in a bragging way, in an ego-based way. I don't say that in a way that trumps or squashes anyone else. I'm saying that in the way is when I learned how to fall madly in love with Lisa, that's when I was able to fall in love with Sean. That's when Sean began to see my love enough to fall in love with Lisa, yeah. Because you saw my love for myself. So by the time we meet here, you're like, oh my God, I love you. And I'm like, I love you too. And it's a real love because, but first, this all began with me needing to learn how to love me. Then you saw me and you loved the way I love me. And then you saw I could love you. And so everything starts with how are you treating yourself? Because the rest of the world is going to be a mirror for how you are being for you. Don't force the world to treat you better. Turn your love volume up. Turn your self-respect volume up. Turn your boundary volume up. Turn your health and wellness volume up. Turn your eating better volume up. Turn your getting more rest volume up. And everyone around you will follow suit. Now, on that second statement.
Yes. Which basically leads into the second statement, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I told you I'm spicy. And I take after my 87-year-old grandmother, who is still, you know, if you follow me on Periscope, every now and then you'll get the benefit of my grandmother doing a grandmother scope. And she is more spicy than I am. And my grandmother taught me, she said when I was 24, she said, I don't know how she knew this, but she spoke my future. She said, baby, a lot of people are going to write about you and a lot of people are going to talk about you. Now, at the time, no one was writing about me. No one was talking about me. In my 20s, I got fired from 5 different jobs, Sean. Like, wow. Companies were tumultuous. I mean, you talk about someone trying to figure out what they wanted to be when they grew up. That was all of my 20s. All of my 20s was riddled with searching and rejection and confusion.
Blessings. We call them blessings, right?
Right. Blessings wrapped in they were all blessings wrapped in sandpaper. Just blessings. And so, and it makes who I am today even better because my 20s set me up for today. So I love it. I embrace
it. Absolutely.
But my grandmother said, she said, when you get older and people are going to write about you, they're going to talk about you a lot in your lifetime. When you get older in my age, don't read what they write about you when you're young, in your 30s, in your 40s, in your 50s. Don't read what they write about you. When you get older in my age, in your 80s, sit in your favorite rocking chair, pull out all the things that they wrote about you and be entertained by who they thought you were while all the time you knew who you were. And
so good.
And that feeds into the other people's perception of you is none of your business. That we spend so much time and energy trying to manage other people's perception of us that you spend less time in your authentic truth for who you really are. You're trying to make sure people like you, they approve you, they validate you, they want to do business with you, they want to be your customer, that whatever that thing is, and what people need is your authentic, transparent, vulnerable truth, unapologetic. Because when you do that, you quietly liberate others to be themselves, to show up, to be powerful. When you let your light shine 100 and you no longer dim it to make sure the people in the room can handle it, but you turn your light all the way up to 1, and if people can't handle your light, you give them permission to put on shades. Come on. That's when people start turning their lights up. And now everyone's walking around needing to wear shades because we're all walking in our true, authentic, unapologetic light. When you do that, what I love about that is, Sean, when you walk in your light, when the person who's listening to my voice, when you walk in your light, see, your light is not for you. Your light is for the person who comes in your path, comes across your path, and they're in that moment in a dark space. And your light, in the very moment that they cross your path, your light illuminates their space enough for them to see who they really are.
Yes. Amen. Amen. I have a feeling someone's going to listen to this podcast and they're just going to put it on repeat all day, because you are just the type of presence that people just want to be surrounded by and listen. Like, I literally could listen to you speak all day because it's just nourishing my soul. Like, I can just feel it. It's amazing.
It's your truth. Like, I find what you feel and what I prayerfully, every person here, my voice, what you feel is, and whatever you call it, not here to impose my faith on you, but the God in me is touching the God in you.
Yes.
The divine in me is touching the divine in you. And when there's a divine connection, like, oh my God, I have the hair on the back of my neck is standing up right now. Like, when you have that kind of divine synergistic connection, something biologically shifts in you and it shifts in me and it's shifting in us. And that's when walls melt and bridges are built. That's when we see each other and we don't shake hands. Heck no, we run and we hug and we embrace and we sweep.
Yes.
And in this conversation, what you find permission to do you know, your whole brand is think outside the lines. And, you know, and then I go a step further and say, you know what? There were never any lines in the first place. Teams all made up think outside the box and then made us all think it was a box.
Totally.
And then what we're doing, what we get to go is, wait, hey, if I can first get you to think outside the line, and then I can walk you far enough to go, I don't even know where the line is anymore.
Yep.
And then we get to come together and realize that we're not horses. We're not horses. We're all unicorns. We're all very different. No one's alike. No one has your DNA. No one has your fingerprint. No one can dance like you. No one can sing like you. No one can talk like you, encourage like you, listen quite like you. No one can hold a space quite like you. No one can do you better than you. So is it worth it? Is it worth it for you to invest everything you got into doing and being the best freaking you possible? Is it worth it to 2016 to turn you up? After all, turn down for what? Like, Amen. Is it worth it? You know what I mean? Is it worth it? Is it worth it for you to stop wondering what people will think about you, what people will say about you? As a matter of fact, give them something to think about. Give them something to talk about. Like, you know, you don't want to leave this place having not made your fingerprint means something. Is it, what can you do today and tomorrow and the next day to create a space of liberation for someone peeking at your life, watching your life, someone you don't even know is watching your life? How can you be an inspiration by the mere fact that you woke up this morning? That's what we should be thinking about.
Right.
I'm so excited. Sorry, I get a little excited.
No, please. It's amazing. Thank you so much. I want to shift gears for a second and talk about pursuing your dreams, because I'm sure there's someone listening right now that's probably on their way to work, go into a job they can't stand or unhappy in, right? And some of the things, and I'm sorry, I'm just throwing your own quotes at you, but they're so profound, I can't not. One of the things you say is that you don't have a job, you have an investor. I mean, you should think of your employer, if you're unhappy there, as someone that's funding your dream account. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think that's really powerful stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. First of all, you've done your homework. I love it.
I told you I'm a fan. This is
I love it, I love it, I love it. You're not a fan, you're a student. Fans love to follow me on Facebook. Students deep dive into the work and begin to have it come out through their DNA.
You're right. You're right. I'm a student.
Very clear. Very clear. So first, if you have a job and you feel restricted by that job, even if you don't, but most people feel restricted by their job, it's suffocating them. They can't live their purpose. I go, wait, hold on. You've gotten the totally wrong view of your job. We're going to rename your job from today forward. It will never have that name again. Your job has now become your investor. It's your investor, because while you're dreaming, while you're finding your purpose, or while you're living your purpose, or while you're planning for your purpose, your investor is making sure that your lights stay on. Your investor is making sure that when you're hungry, you have food in the refrigerator. So your investor is simply that stable foundation that gives you the freedom and the space to dream. And so let that investor invest you. Now, we need to shift the way we relate to the investor. One, make sure that you have a joyous energy of gratitude toward your investor, because then it'll feel easier being there. Your day doesn't get any shorter. Your 8-hour day doesn't turn to 5 hours if you're grumpy. It's 8 hours. It just feels like it's 14 hours. So let's shift to an attitude of gratitude, because every day you show up to the investor and you still are employed, that means they chose you again. We as individuals tend to forget that and think we're just doing our investor a favor, when in fact, every day we show up, I show up for you, the investor shows up for me. Every day we're choosing each other again. That's number one. Number two is utilize the investor differently. Let the investor invest in your breathtaking future. Now, you know me, Sean, I wrote a check to myself every 2 weeks. Like I write a check right now for my mortgage and my car note and all the other things that I have, I wrote a check to myself. And in the night, I put funding my dream. And on some days when the investor was really bothering me, I put investor funding my dream. Because then I looked at my formerly JOB as my investor, and they were paying for my freedom to come. And I literally would write myself a check every 2 weeks. And every 2 weeks, I made sure that the check had to be at least 5% higher than the previous check that I wrote. Now, at the time, I worked for Los Angeles Unified School District. So I wasn't making a whole lot of money. My son was 3 years old. My first check I wrote to myself was 100. And I begin to back out of doing things. I stopped getting my hair done professionally. I stopped getting my nails done professionally. I stopped going out for dinner and dancing so I could write a bigger check from my investor to my dream. So my investor was writing a check to my dream. My investor was writing a check to my future. My investor was buying my freedom. My investor purchased my freedom. If you really get what I'm saying, I know I'm repeating myself because repetition sometimes helps us get a little deeper. Because right now you think it's some that employer over there who doesn't care about you, doesn't value. No. Quit, change your story. That's your investor over there waiting for you to have your investor write a check on a biweekly, weekly, monthly basis to purchase your freedom. When I tell you I have facilitated so many people doing this, they couldn't believe it. They would go to work early, stay late, get super excited. Their whole energy shifted while they're writing those checks.
I love that so much because it really is just a reminder of when you shift the way you think about something, it changes the dynamic completely, right?
Yes. I tell people all the time, you could be in a tumultuous relationship with someone, you guys haven't gotten along for years, and you can shift your energy and your interaction with them, and you don't ever have to bring it up to them that you want to change the relationship, and the relationship will change on its own.
That's so amazing. So self-talk, it's obviously critical, right?
Yes.
Let's say that I want love, prosperity, abundance, more of those things in my life. What is the conversation I should be having with myself every day?
Number one, those are all separate affirmations that you have to focus on. Those are all separate because they're all big. So love, prosperity, and Sean, what you know I'm known for is I'm known for addressing your blocks as well as addressing the reach.
Correct.
So we're going to reach for something, but we got to first know what we're trying to climb over. We got to know what we're trying to climb under, what we got to do. So you know from the book, I think it's, I don't know, page 228 or 156. I know it's one of those pages. I talked about your money blueprint.
Yeah.
And so one, it's to expose. I think the best way to have a breakthrough in any area and bring more of something you want in your life is to expose the conversation, expose the limiting self-talk that has you where you are. So just expose it. I always say, you know, and I have this exercise called expose the lies that I walk my students through. And we just expose the conversation. Now, what I like to do, and I didn't start doing this, but I've grown into doing this, and that is I categorize my lies. So I just want to talk about all my lies around love and relationship so that it doesn't get convoluted with money and health and spirituality. Like, let me just dump all this out. It's like a emotional mental detox. It doesn't feel good doing it because now you're looking at all and I'm going to say all the verbal cancer that you feed yourself, because we know the big C is something that, it's just, we don't know how to hear. So all the toxic energy you feed yourself around relationship. So first, dump that out. So the way you get to a positive thinking, the way you get to, you move past your and shift your self-talk to stuff that's fueling is first, dump it out of your head, all of the toxic things. So one, you should have four sheets of paper. One sheet of paper is about relationships. One sheet of paper is about money and finances. One sheet of paper is about health and wellness. And the other sheet of paper, if you want to do it, is about religion, spirituality, and that spiritual awareness. I like to do all four. And first, let's find out what we need to dump out. Now, I want you to call that exposing your lies. Because if you write down something that you identify as a lie, your mind neurologically understands now, we believe that's a lie. So just by saying, expose the lie. Now, if you write it down, even Sean, if it's difficult to find a new belief system to replace it with, at the very least, we have identified this thought as a lie.
Yes.
Because you've lived for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, some people, unconsciously accepting this as your truth.
Yes, so true.
By this mere act, and you got to write it at the top, lies about relationships, lies about my finances, lies about health and wellness, lies about spiritual. So every time you read the list, you'll start at the top because that's where our eyes go. And you'll say, here are my lies. Here are my lies. Once you've done that, then your mind has literally neurologically shifted and imprinted these are lies. So now your mind will automatically, our mind is a beautiful, brilliant piece of work. It will say, what's the truth? What's the truth? What's the truth? Like, you're not complete until you find the truth, right? and so that's when you begin affirmations. And to understand that everything you say after the statement, I am, your unconscious mind believes it to be true.
Yes.
So instead of going to find love, first expose the lies that you have about love so we know they're lies. Then begin to do the I am affirmations around your worthiness of love. See, I used to go, I am going to have a great relationship. But I realized that before I said I'm going to have a great relationship, I needed to say I am worthy.
Yep, totally.
Of a long-lasting, healthy relationship. I am worthy of a monogamous relationship. I am worthy of a passionate relationship. I am able to fall in love with anyone I choose, regardless of my brand. You know, because when you build a brand like mine, and I'm single and I'm dating, but when you build a brand like mine, all of a sudden society can tell you who they think you should be dating or the type of man you should be dating. And I have to constantly say, I am free to date whomever I choose.
Amen to that. So I know we're wrapping up on time here. I want to ask you a question that I ask all of my guests.
Yes.
What is your definition of success, and do you think you've achieved it?
My definition of success is to lay down at night and in my time with God to hear each day, job well done, my child.
Amen to that.
And I believe that I have. I believe that I've written the obituary that I want to be read at my homegoing celebration. I've lived the story I want to be told about my contribution to this planet.
That is beautiful. Finally, there's someone listening right now. They have a dream. They've either given up on that dream or they believe that it's too big. What do you want to say to that person?
That if your dream doesn't scare you, then you're not dreaming big enough. And if you know how to make the dream happen as soon as you have the dream, then it's not big enough. So your confusion and your trepidation and your nervousness comes with dreaming big. Embrace it. Fear is not your enemy. Fear is your friend. It just tells you need to go learn some more. That you're not the first person to want to give up. You're not the first person to think it not be possible. Find an example and hook your caboose onto that example's train. Eat your Wheaties, hold on tight, and get running. Your dream is not about you. It's about someone who's going to watch you make it your reality.
Lisa, it has been such a blessing to share this time with you. Thank you so much. Please tell us how we can connect with you on the web.
Oh my God. You can go to motivatingthemasses.com. That's my website. It shows you the things I'm doing. Hopefully, Sean, I'd love for you to come and join me live at our annual event, Speaking Right to Make Millions, our powerhouse speakers. You need to be in our room. Like, you need to just come. You need to.
It would be an honor. I want to be there so badly.
Yeah, you know, I think I need to make you my special guest. You need to be there. You need to come. Speaking Right to Make Millions, you need to come. Go on my website, see about it, then call my office, speak to my assistant, just to let them know you did the interview with me and that I want you as my special guest. So you need to come. And anyone else, of course, you guys can join us. But Sean, I need to have you there because you're just a light. I love your energy. I love the space you come from, your humility. I love your contribution to the planet. And I want to make it easier for you to hook your caboose to my train and hold on tight.
Lisa Nichols, you have inspired me and countless others in ways that you will never know. It's been an honor.
Amen. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
All right. I want to thank my guests today for sharing their insight with us. And I'm incredibly grateful to you for taking the time out of your day to listen to this conversation. I hope it left you better and smarter. If you haven't already, please be sure to subscribe and leave a review for the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have an idea for a future guest or a particular topic you'd like me to cover, you can email me directly, hello@thinkoutsidethelines.com. Now may you go out into the world today and leave things better than you found them. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.